Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Carol's Corner MMA Podcast. On our show, is brought to you by MyMMAnews.com, your number one source for MMA news. Be sure to follow us on social media at MyMMAnews and follow me, myself, the host, Kyle Carroll, at Jiblitz77, that is JIBLITZ77 on Twitter. This show, we're joined by Eric Ott, 185-pound ACC title contender, and Carlos the Natural Rodriguez fighting for the 135-pound title as well. So we're going to introduce our guest today. Eric and Carlos, thank you for coming on to the show tonight.
Hey, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, Kyle? How are you? How are you, Carlos?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
Nice to meet you, man.
Thanks for coming on. We got one of the biggest shows coming up in Long Island area for amateur MMA outside of the UFC. Eric, you want to start it off? Tell us a little bit about your fight coming up and about yourself.
Sure. Well, I got a fight for the 185-pound middleweight title. That's the ACC title. I'm fighting a gentleman by the name of Dan Coleman, who is a 2-0 record. He's at a striking 101. And I'm a former WKA New York State middleweight title holder. So now it's time to go around and start collecting some of the belts. So I'm real excited about this, Kyle.
Awesome. Yeah, I know everyone's looking forward to the fight. We were pretty stoked when they got added to the one of the 7 title fights of the evening. Carlos, you're also fighting for a title. You're fighting Daniel Rodriguez. You want to tell us a little bit about yourself and your fight coming up?
Yeah. Well, yet again, my name is Carlos Rodriguez. For those that are listening, I fight out of the Bronx, much like Daniel Rodriguez. I fight out of Masuko's Champion Factory. I'm currently the USMTA K-1 champion for aggressive. And yet again, I'm fighting for the bantamweight title, the USMTA bantamweight title. I'm stoked about this, man. This is a big opportunity for me to display my ability, you know, and for the masses. So I really can't wait for this to happen.
Awesome. Now, being that this is one of the biggest shows, you guys are one of 7 title fights. I know they still haven't decided who's going to be the main event. Can you tell us about your thoughts on the fact that KTFO and Aggressive Combat Championships doing a cross promotion to provide this massive event going on? What are your thoughts on that?
Personally, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, we're here in New York, and when amateur MMA first began getting sanctioned a couple years ago, a lot of fight promotions teamed up. And I've been involved in mixed martial arts since the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was a mistake. So many people began their own MMA show, people that knew each other, had shows that were competing against each other, and I think it's time for some of these shows to turn into conglomerates, and maybe we have, we had 5 or 6 different MMA shows around the New York metropolitan area, and realistically, I think we can support 2 shows. So I think it's cool that they teamed up. Hopefully they do more shows like this teamed up together or start a new promotion going forward, and maybe we can sort of slim down the amount of shows, because I'm sure Carlos does as well. We get hit up by like every promotion after every fight,
yeah,
trying to get us on, we'll give you a title, this, that, and it's too much. I can't fight every month or every 2 months. Like, the amount of fighters in our area can't support 4 shows or 6 shows. So it'd be cool to have like a show maybe every other month. This way you always have an opportunity to get on something. And hopefully at that point with two shows or this show teaming up, that the promoters can make a little bit of money for themselves and things sort of trickle down a little bit. But right now it's too spread out and things need to consolidate.
Oh, you make a great point, Eric.
Yeah.
Oh, were you going to say, Carlos? I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was gonna agree with Eric. Like myself, I've been training and fighting for many years. I started out just as a Muay Thai fighter and K-1 fighter, and you know, and I started doing MMA. Background is in MMA, and when I started, it was a lot of the underground combat leagues that were out there promoting MMA when it wasn't legal. And again, you know, being that it started as with New York, at least it started as amateur legal-wise. There were a whole bunch of shows hitting up fighters just to jump on the show to fight. And, you know, we as fighters, we want to fight. That's our passion. We want to make it to the big show eventually. So we want to throw ourselves in every show as fast as much as possible. But, it's a risk factor, too, because you're going from one fight to the other, and you don't know who is sanctioned with what. And as fighters, we're not educated all the time thinking that we're getting on the right show. What ACC and KTFO is doing, it's like the UFC for the amateurs. This is the way it feels, at least to me, it does. You know, we just got the legalization of UFC in New York, and now we're ending, at least amateur-wise, we're ending with the best show in New York for the amateur base. And, you know, this is a great way to really reintroduce MMA to the masses, at least through the amateur ranks, you know, so we could really show our talent to the pro leagues.
Definitely, I agree 100%. I really believe the fact that these two promotions are combining and putting together a show like this to end the year is a great way to finish the 2016 year, which has been a great year for New York in the sport of mixed arts. Carlos, when you're talking about all these other promotions that hit you up, and you talk about this promotion being like a mini UFC type promotion. How has it changed since the legalization, now the USMTA sanctioning body for KTFO and ACC? How has sanctioning bodies and the safety for fighters improved?
Oh, you want to go first, Eric?
Sure, I mean, either or. I don't care. You want to get at it? I got a couple things to say.
Okay. Yeah, you go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Like I said, I've been involved in the sport for probably about 15 or 16 years. I used to go to events in the 90s when it was like illegal everywhere. And as Carlos mentioned, in New York for a long time, there were a lot of underground fight leagues. And there would be like fights where you would legitimately like put your telephone number on a list and you'd send them like a check in the mail. And then somebody would like call your phone and give you an address like the day of the fight. And you would show up, and there would be, like, no doctors.
Yeah, man.
Terrible, terrible, terrible stuff. And, like, I remember I've seen guys, like, literally, like, there with, like, their kids, and you're, like, sitting next to them in the bleachers, and the next thing you know, the guy, like, gets up, puts on, like, a pair of gloves, and then gets into the ring and, like, fights another
dude.
I've seen that.
Oh, shit.
It was definitely not safe, but it was all we had.
Yeah.
So now with the sanctioning coming in, they're cleaning up all that stuff to make sure that that doesn't happen anymore. Obviously, we all get medicals and we all get blood work. We get tested to make sure that we don't have anything like AIDS or hepatitis. And on staff, like actually at the events, there's always paramedics. There's always a ringside physician. And they do as best a job as possible to keep all of the fighters safe. That's the main goal. And I feel like in New York, they actually go a little bit overboard because the sport is new. It's just newly sanctioned here, and they wouldn't want to have a real bad injury in the first year that the sport is sanctioned in our state. So I think that's good overall, especially as amateurs. We're not getting paid. We don't have our next 6 months rent riding on the check that we're going to get at the end. So keeping us safe so that we can move on and maybe fight in another month or two if we get a loss and keep moving forward, I think that's the main thing at this point.
Definitely.
And I think that they're doing a very good job of it. How do you feel, Carlos?
No, you're absolutely right, man. The last event that I did was in June 25th, I believe, if I remember. Cause of course, I fought that day. It felt like a pro. I mean, and ACC has always been like that since I started competing with them. It's always felt like a pro-style ran, organization. And being that the USMTA is really like now in the forefront of running things as far as MMA, you start to really feel like, oh wow, this is the way the pros is going to be. Like, you know, it's training from the get, not just training with preparing for a fight, 6 to 8 week camp. The moment you step into the arena, whether it be in the Queens Theater or wherever it's going to be at, you're dealing with guys that are constant professionals. You get the best referees. You know, last show we had Dan Mergliata and Kevin Mulhall. You can't ask for two of the best in their respected profession in with us, refereeing us. And then now you have doctors, legit doctors and legit, EMT workers or EMS workers there. You know, you even have guys rapping us now, like the way they do in the pros, a professional rap being given to us too. You know, so it's like it's come a long way, and I truly appreciate all this because now we feel what it's like to be taken care of, and again, like Eric said, we're not getting paid, as mm-hmm. amateurs, we're giving it all. Our step is to get to where our idols are at, and for them to do that for us, it's more than enough, it just lets us know that. Win or lose, we're still coming out of there. At least we can get up the next day, the next morning, and not walk around with a concussion or, a broken arm, something like that. They're going to take care of us as soon as possible. So.
Yeah, no, Carlos, you made a point about the guys coming in and wrapping your hands professionally. I usually don't go in the back, but I know the last KTFO promotion, or actually two events ago for KTFO, I went in the back, and I saw they had guys coming back and taping the hands. I really think that makes a world of difference when you have professionals
in,
people who, that's what they do. They come in and tape hands. I thought that was great, and that's a great step towards building a more professional organization. And like what Eric was talking about, guys getting off out of the bleachers with gloves on. One of my favorite stories, I was in Indiana covering an event, and this guy, he's outside smoking a cigarette. And he walks in at the same time as me, and then all of a sudden I see him fighting later on that night.
Yeah, man.
I've seen it too.
Like Eric said, just like that, man. I was sitting my first time, and to be honest, I was supposed to have fought that night. It was one of these underground fights in Queens. I was a young kid. I was like 18, 19, something like that. Luckily, my coach pulled me out. He was like, "You're not doing it." But we went to go watch anyway, and they needed a guy to fill in. Mind you, it was a mismatch in weight and everything. The guy walked in, he just had the balls to want to fight, and he got knocked out the moment he stepped in, and it was atrocious. And they didn't even They had one medic on staff. They had one medic on staff. They didn't even have, you see a few around. Like Eric said, they have numerous physicians around and medics just observing the fight. You only have one guy. It's like he's burdened with all this craziness. It was like, it's come a long way, man. It's come a long way.
All right, so yeah. We're going to shift gears a little bit. Carlos, you want to tell me about your opponent coming up? I saw you fight at your last fight. You're really fast. You have extremely quick hands, and you're pretty accurate. Tell us about your opponent, and what gym do you come from? I'm not even sure what gym you're at.
Yeah, well, luckily, you see how you say that? That's a good and a bad thing. A good thing is we come from a small gym. It's pretty much like a ran by a two-man show. I come out of Masuko's Champion Factory out of the Bronx. Masuko's been a pioneer in MMA and just in martial arts in general for the past 25 years. Just a little bit about my instructor. He's a two-time kickboxing champion as an amateur. Unfortunately, he couldn't make it all the way through, but he left his aspirations within his fighters. And I started with him as a young kid, 18 years old. I started out in a fight club downtown. I don't know if you guys remember that. The fight house downtown when they used to run the Muay Thai shows there. And mm-hmm. I started out in Muay Thai, and then I was trying to dabble in the MMA because we really focused on our grappling a lot, and we was trying to get into MMA and couldn't. There was nothing out here in New York at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we was trying to get to Jersey. Jersey was like impossible to get out to. We was getting lost. We got lost to fights and everything. We couldn't even get to a fight. So we focused on the real, real, like, low-level circuit of sports jiu-jitsu, which I know Eugene and Tom was promoting before, and I never fought with them when it came to that. But I fought in other local shows when it came to that. And then, then I started fighting with Aggressive like a few years prior to that. But, again, I fight out of the Bronx, Masuko's Champion Factory. We've been stapled in our neighborhood for a good 4 or 5 years now. So fighting out of there. And like I said, it's a good and a bad thing because the good thing is nobody really knows who we are, so most of our training is kind of secretive. The bad thing is, you know, we're not out there like the way Jungle Gym is, and that's who I'm fighting. Fighting a kid by the name of Daniel Flaco Rodriguez, who I've seen fight before. He's very talented, very tough, game opponent, you know, mentally powerful, physically strong. You know, he's this is one of the toughest tests for me at this point in my amateur career. And I'm bringing everything I possibly can to this fight. I've been training my butt off for this. You know, I never take anybody lightly, never had since I've been competing, and I'm definitely not taking him lightly, but he needs to know that I'm going to be fighting hard, you know, for this. It's more than just a belt to me. You know, belts, everybody can collect a belt. You can go anywhere and fight a bum to collect a belt. I'm fighting for pride. I'm fighting for, you know, I'm fighting to get to the next level to feed my family. So, like I said, Daniel Rodriguez is a very gained opponent. You know, I take nothing away from him and Master Chim. One of my first fights was against them, and I unfortunately came out as the loser, but I know what they're coming with, you know, so.
Awesome. Now, you're talking about you want to make it to the next level. Do you have a timeline or a timetable where you want to jump to the professional level, take it to the next level?
Well, currently, like, I'm 29, man. Like, I'm not old. I'm not an old man, but a lot of people wouldn't say it. They couldn't even tell my age. They couldn't even tell my age if you saw me. But in the fight game, you know, I've been training for a long time. I got my few share of licks and bruises, and you know, your body can only hold up but so much. And I don't want to be an amateur forever. I definitely want to get to that professional level and really test my abilities. Because I feel like I know for a fact in my heart I can hang with those at 135, whether it be in World Series Fighting or Bellator or even more regional shows like Arena Combat. I believe I can hang with the best, you know, in my heart. In my heart, I believe I can hang with anybody. And I want to be able to, like, take my talent to the next level and make a future out of this. You know, I'm not trying to be king of the world, but I want to be known as somebody, and be able to open up my own school and be able to teach to the masses, just like a lot of my idols do.
Oh yeah, Carlos, I gotta say, last time your last fight at the ACC, you reminded me a lot of I don't know if you ever watched Chico Camus out of Rufus Sport, him fighting.
No,
and
no.
I used to watch a lot of his and attend a lot of his fights in Wisconsin when I lived out there covering the fight scene. And your hand speed and your movement reminded me a lot of Chico Camus.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought your speed and your accuracy was unreal. I really did. It was awesome watching you. I know I'm among many who are looking forward to seeing you get inside the cage and fighting again.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. I really do. You know.
For those who are interested in calling in and asking our guest Carlos Rodriguez or Eric Ott a question, 323-870-4011. Feel free to call in if there is anyone listening. That'd be awesome. Eric, you want to tell us about you're coming out of Long Island MMA. I know you train at a couple gyms. You want to tell us a little bit about your opponent and your fight coming up?
Sure. I'll start with my opponent because it'll be really pretty quick. They're, like, pretty secretive, and I don't know much about him. I've seen 2 minutes of a clip of one of his fights. I know that he's primarily a striker, and I'm pretty tall. I'm 6'3", and he's 6'4", so he's an inch taller than me. But aside
oh,
from
no,
that.
Oh, no, yeah, huge. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm a pretty big guy.
The big fight legit. They're going to get it in. I can't wait for that fight.
So we're going to be two really tall, lean, lanky guys squaring up in the middle of the ring. And as far as my training goes, like you mentioned, I split my time between Belmore Kickboxing Academy with Keith Trimble and Long Island MMA. I'm over there with Ryan LaFlair and Greg DePasquale. So I pretty much split the week. I'm at each gym either like 2 or 3 days, and I rotate back and forth. My sparring is broken up. I'll spar with guys from both gyms, and we do a lot of cross work together where we'll get guys from their gym. We'll come to from Belmore. We'll go to Long Island MMA and vice versa. So we got a pretty good stable of guys that run the spectrum from amateur to professional. So I really get to see sort of where I fit into the pecking order with guys that are in the UFC or guys that are in Bellator, or whether it's guys that are just like phenomenal at jiu-jitsu and we're just working a lot of jiu-jitsu. There's pretty much an even spectrum of everybody. Got a couple of good boxers too out of Belmore, where it's like Chris Algieri or Adam Kaunaki. I always get to like test myself a little bit. Like for this fight, I've been sparring with I've been moving around with Ryan LaFlair. Obviously, he's like UFC 170 pounder, and Costas Philippou, I was training with on Sunday, retired UFC fighter out of Belmore. Look for him; he might be making a comeback soon. We'll see. And it's awesome to have the opportunity to train with a lot of really high level people, and just to see how it is that they live and how it is that they prepare for the fights and get information from them, et cetera. It's like anything. It's a learning experience.
Definitely. And Eric, when we were driving home from the city, when we went to Joe's
Premiere?
Yeah, the movie premiere, which was interesting. It was pretty cool. You were talking about how this is something you love to do. Tell us about, like, why do you do it? Because, you know, like
I don't know. I think there's something wrong with me. I really don't know.
There's everything wrong with us to do this shit.
Yeah. Yo, my parents.
Wrong with us.
My parents think there's definitely something wrong with me. I've liked fighting and violence since I was like a small child, and I'm trying to think. I like honestly feel like this is like the closest thing for me getting that, like scratching that itch that I have for that. Because I'm just so inclined in that direction. I mean, I worked as a bouncer for like 10 years when I was younger, so that like scratched the itch a little bit, but not enough. But the MMA, it's something I've always trained and I've always done as like a hobby, and I really love doing it. Like Carlos and I mentioned earlier, like we don't really get paid as amateurs. We might make a little bit of sponsor money and stuff like that, but we're not doing this for the payday. We're doing this because we love the sport. We love to do it, and then maybe at some point down the road, we'll get ourselves into a position where we're able to make money as professionals. But I mean, if you're in the fight game because you think you're going to be Conor McGregor, and you're past the age of like 25, it just isn't going to happen.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, bro. I totally agree.
Like we can make a living. I'm 33 years old, and like I earn my money in the old-fashioned way. But if some point comes up where I can make a little bit of money and I can support my family fighting, I'm definitely going to take that opportunity. But I don't have any delusions of grandeur where I think I'm going to be making $14 million paydays or anything like that and selling a million pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You know, that's humble beginnings, man. That's what we call, you know, that's what we call it. You got to be humble throughout this sport.
Now, I don't know if you guys heard, but my MMA News, they were on the conference call today. The owner, Eric Cowell, he reported about a few fighters that had this big announcement going on, and it's actually
the union.
They didn't want to call it a union; they were calling it an athlete association. So
mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a player association for like football, where they help them out, they try to get them money, stuff like that, and trying to get them better contracts. It's a little different. The way the article read, it was a little different than a union, but it was fighting for the fighters, and I know a lot of them that, like Tim Kennedy is part of it, Donald Cerrone, and they're a little concerned about speaking out about it now with the fighting in the UFC. What are your thoughts about that? Is it time for Fighters Association or a union, or what do they have to do to become a mainstream sport?
You want to lead?
You know what?
You lead.
I definitely want to answer this because we see it again. We have three major sports in America. We have baseball. They have a players union. We have basketball and football, major sports, they all have a union. Whether it's being repped the right way, that's all up for discussion. But at least they have someone to rep them. You know, as far as fighters, you see the UFC now and how big it's gotten and how short of a time that it's been here in this country. I think the MMA needs that because it's the toughest sport in the world. This is the toughest sport in the world, let alone the fight. The training itself is grueling, you know. Again, like Eric was saying, he cross-trained. That's grueling itself. You're cross-training with beasts every day. Look at the names he just gave you. Now, your body's waking up, sore as hell. It's the day that you probably didn't want to get up, you know, or you have an injury or whatever. And then you got to go into this fight and possibly, you know, fight through an injury that you can make even worse. Why not get and take it care of? Or if something that's medically that you need cleared that you can't get cleared, you can get cleared because of representation. You're not left out to dry. How many fighters you know now are left out to dry? Professional that in the UFC now, you know, it's about time
too many.
That this happens. It's too many. There's too many awesome guys that I've come across that I've got to train with, you know, or who were on you know, UFC bound or whatever. Forget about UFC. Just on bound to that next. They couldn't get cleared because the expenses were too much, or you know, their manager just straight up shitted on them. Just took everything that they were working for. And they ran away somewhere. You know, we need the proper representation. We need guys that are in the sport now, like those like Donald Cerrone, you know, and to really rep the guys that are, especially that are coming up, like myself and Eric. You know, we don't know, at least myself, I don't know much about the professional game when it comes to it, because now you're not just dealing with fighting, you're dealing with business. You're dealing with a lot of business, and you don't want to be, again, the key word, you don't want to be left out to dry. You know, you go in, you sign a contract, and you don't even know that they're not going to cover you for the first 6 months with expenses or something like that because you can't read the contract properly, you know, or you know, whatever the case might be. You know, we need this fighters union or whatever they're going to call it. And I think it'll help boost popularity, especially in those cities that are still questioning the sport itself, because a lot of people to this day, I come across them, they still find it barbaric. They don't see the art in it. They don't see the beauty in it. So it's like, you know, if you have this and they start seeing that it's getting closer to like the NFL, you see what happens after 10 years after the life of being a football player, they become vegetables, you know, and this sport is highly respected. You know, why can't we have the same thing and prevent ourselves from looking or feeling the same way these guys are feeling? You know?
Definitely. For those who are listening, if you want to check it out and read a little bit more about it, I tweeted out the link.
I need to read up
to the article. Yeah. Check it out on my Twitter at @giblitz77, @JIBLITZ77. Their Twitter handler is called MMAAA. So check it out. I have the link on there to the article as well as to their Twitter handle. So yeah, definitely. Eric, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, the Players Association as a whole, or the Athletes Association, I mean, it's just a great tool, so they'll be able to collectively bargain effectively with the UFC, because I'm assuming it's just going to be dealing with the UFC at first, because they're like the major league. And
well, you know,
can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I hear like a crazy amount of static on the line.
Oh, all right.
It
yeah,
may be me. I just stepped out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I just got out of the car.
All right.
I'm just coming off the train. Shit.
I hear that. So as far as like the MMA Athletes Association goes, it's something that's really, really been needed. Like, I have a whole bunch of friends that fight professionally, and I hear the horror stories of them getting injured, whether it's in fights or in training, and not getting the organizations they fight for to pay for their rehab or whatever it is they need, their surgery sometimes, and them having to literally like fight and argue for several months at a time in order to get like a surgery. I know Al Iaquinta, he's having a very public dispute about a surgery that he needed.
Oh, yeah.
he's been Hughes pulled off cards, and he was trying to fight and then decided not to, just because I think he had to argue something like 4 months to get a knee procedure or something like that. That they were saying that
he was pulled off the 200 card. He was pulled off the 200 card because of that, right? He was trying to New York.
Yep. So, like, we definitely, as fighters, we need a union or an association just that can collectively bargain for us, because when it's you versus the big organization, they can dick you around or string you along and sort of waste your time until you fade away. But I think that this has been a long time coming. And as Carlos said, like, every other professional sport has a players association or a players union that's able to make sure that the fighters' best interests are looked after. And, like, I'm sure they're going to be arguing for pay, because the amount that professional fighters are paid, or MMA fighters in general, is just pitiful. It's just sad. And it's not really a living wage. Like, if you look at, like, a contract that's 8-8, that's, or 10-10, that's putting you at 20 grand a fight. If you can, most fighters can only fight two times a year. If you have a really, really great year, you're at fighting three times a year. But, I mean, that's only $60,000, and to live, and out of that $60,000, you got to pay your trainers, you're dishing out at least 10-15%, and then your managers is another 10%. So, like, you're losing roughly 25-30% right from the get-go, right off that top number. So you're, all of a sudden, you're being marginalized, and your income for a professional athlete in the biggest organization in the world, you're all of a sudden, you're like making $40,000 a year. And I mean, I'd rather get up every day and go to a job to make that money than get punched in the face and have the shit kicked out of me and limp around like a crippled old man, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I know, yeah. I read online the percentage for athletes in football, basketball, and baseball is about 50% of what the owners make. So the players make about 50% of what they get. Where the UFC fighters, they make about, or MMA fighters, just to say, make about 8% and less.
That Reebok deal is killing the UFC fighters. That Reebok deal. They were making way more money with the sponsors, man.
Well, it's Donald Cerrone. He's one of the guys that's heading this movement. He talked about how he lost about $50,000 every fight in sponsorships because
from Budweiser alone. Remember, he's sponsored by Budweiser, and I believe he has ownership by with NASCAR, because he's always at NASCAR.
Okay.
So I know he has some type of sponsorship with them, and I'm sure he's losing big bucks. I mean, come on, NASCAR, that's another big sport, you know, and I'm sure they have player representation too, and then I don't even consider them athletes. They're in the car all day. Like, they can get they get better deals than us.
It's true.
Well, the MMA Athletic Association is headed by Rebony, the guy who used to be the CEO of Bellator, George St. Pierre, Tim Kennedy, Donald Cerrone, TJ Dillashaw, and Cain Velasquez. So there's some big names jumping in part of it.
I think that the UFC being sold over the summer opened up the door for this, because a lot of MMA fighters, especially UFC fighters, have had an allegiance to the Fertitta brothers and to Dana White. Because without the Fertitta brothers or Dana White, we probably wouldn't be having this conversation right now, because MMA wouldn't
that's
be a sport.
True.
I feel like the Fertitta brothers sort of signing off and passing it along to, like, the giant corporation that owns it now, selling their shares. And Dana White now, he sold his 10% of the company, but he's still staying on just as, like, sort of like the figurehead of the company. But he can walk away whenever he wants. I know that Joe Rogan is walking away soon. So
That's sad when he's gone, man.
The UFC looking to get rid of Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg and bring in some other people.
He wants to get rid of. I didn't even read that. I hear Joe Rogan on his podcast all the time, because I follow him all the time, and he never mentioned that. Wow, that's a shocker that they want to get rid of him, because he's more willing. Like, he's willing to just walk away from it within a year or something like that.
You know what? A lot of these guys came on and signed on with the UFC in the early days. And in the early days, I think in whether it was 99 or 2000, when the Fertittas first bought the sport, bought the sport, because essentially they did. The UFC was like the only thing around back then. They didn't have money to pay these guys. So all of these guys like Joe Silva, who we just found out actually owned like 1% of the company, and Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg, everyone was getting paid essentially diddly squat to do their job for those early years when the UFC itself wasn't making any money. So I feel like the Fertittas, they seemed like pretty solid guys, were probably throwing bones to everybody later on when they started making money. And I know that a lot of guys were getting paid asinine amounts of money. Like, and they had very inflated contracts with the UFC, not the fighters, but like the staff of the UFC themselves. So when the new owners came in, they started to trim the fat. And Joe Silva was like one of the first people to go. I think they let him technically like resign and take another position, but they basically gave Joe Silva the boot. And I'm assuming that's happened with the rest of these guys that were all being, they know they can get commentators for cheaper. They know they can get matchmakers to do the job for cheaper. Like, why is Joe Silva making 250 grand a year when we can get somebody that'll probably do it for 80?
Yeah, you're definitely right about that.
So I'm assuming that's what's happening right now. They're just basically trimming off all the fat, and they're trying to run the thing like an actual, running the thing like a business, an efficient business. And the writing on the wall as far as like the Fighters Union or the Fighters Association, I mean, the writing's been on the wall. People have been talking about this for several years, and it's something that's needed. You can't have a professional sport where everybody that fights in your organization is an independent contractor, and people are continually fighting over insurance and who makes what and who fights who. Like, right now the problem they're having with the fighters is guys don't want to fight on cards that they're not getting any exposure on, and they're not signing contracts. Or if you're like a guy that gets pay-per-view revenue, and the next thing you know, they want to throw you on a card that has a shitty main event, you're like, I don't want a pay-per-view cut of something that's going to do 200,000 buys. Put me on the McGregor pay-per-view because I want 50 cents of a million buys. So guys are like pretending that they're injured, they're holding out, they're not signing their contracts. And the reason they're doing that is because they're not making enough money to survive. Like, it's a survival tactic. It's not because, oh, I made $500,000 last year, I'm getting greedy and I want to make a little bit more, so I'm going to hold out for this card. It's like, I made $70,000. I say it's 70 grand, or I made 50 grand last year, or I was injured and I couldn't fight at all last year, so I need to make some money to put some food on the table.
Now, do you think a problem of that is the fact that the rosters for the UFC is flooded? Now, there's probably that's a lot of fighters to maintain and try to get in the fight all the time.
How many fighters in the UFC is what, over 300?
It's 500 now.
500 now? The last a year ago was up to 3? It jumped like that?
I know they were at 350, and then I saw a number saw the number 500 today.
Yeah, that's a lot of fighters. You know what the problem is? And again, you have your good and the bad. You got to weigh the good with the bad. The good thing about the UFC is that all the best fighters have to fight each other. This is why we love the sport. This is why we compete, at least as martial artists, right?
It's not
as
like
martial
it's not
artists,
like
we want to test ourselves. Exactly. That's the point. It's not like boxing. It's one belt, one division that you have to fight for. Hopefully they're going to open up. The story is they're opening up more divisions. They may or may not, you know, get it. They may put a 65 and 70, 75, every 5 to 10 pounds, something like that. But it's not like boxing. But the thing about boxing is because there's so many divisions, you can make money and earn your titles by making that money, you know, because you can go up 2 pounds, you can go up 4 pounds, and you can still, they don't get injured as much. When do you hear a lot of boxers pulling out? You don't hear that much. You know, and they can fight in whatever weight class they want to because it's an easy cut. Because, again, the weight, it's 2 pounds to 4 pounds. So injury is less occurring. And then, again, boxing's been around for almost 100 plus years. The money, it's been overflooded through just years and years in investment in Wall Street and, you know, and other things that you can throw into there that this is constantly being is revenue. Constant revenue, especially when it comes to Las Vegas and New York, when it comes to boxing. So, you know, boxing itself is just it's just generated. You know, MMA's only been around for 25 years, maybe a little bit more. So it's making quick money good, but like Eric pointed out, you know, where's the money actually trickling down to? it's trickling down to the staff members, those that are in power, you know, those that are actually, they can dish out the money, especially, and especially now that the UFC has sold themselves and they have like a conglomerate where you have guys that are buying partial shares of the company, like Conan and Brian and Tom Brady and all these other guys that have power now, you know, so they can give or they can take more. You know, it's there goes your good and your bad right there, you know?
Well, like one thing that's very unique, I think, about fighters is the fact that they train year round. Like football, you get an off season. Baseball, off season. Hockey, basketball, NASCAR, off season. But you come to MMA or boxing, and there really is no off season except for in between fights. And if
you
want to
get injured, it's called I need surgery. It's cool. I need surgery. I'm going to be out for 4 months. That's my vacation.
Exactly. You're spending more money on rehab and you're stressing. Forget about vacation. Shit.
Yeah, hitting those $20 co-pays twice a week adds up.
I was thinking with the divisions and the roster as big as it is in the UFC, could they possibly split the division, like say 135, they cut it in half. And then say that, you know how NFL does AFC, NFC, you win that division, and then you fight for the title.
That would be
cool.
Oh,
it's like you're talking like a K-1 style tournament?
I suppose, but like, you know, like over the year, everyone fights each other on that side of the bracket.
And then at the end of the year,
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
best record fights for it.
That would be pretty cool.
I think it would be a different.
That would. That would be great.
I know we have a caller on the line. He's live. If you want to join us and ask a question.
Hey, man.
How you doing? What's your name, buddy?
My name is Peter.
Come on, Peter.
I got a question for Carlos Rodriguez.
Sure.
Hey, Carlos.
How you doing, Peter?
Hey man, I've been a fan of aggressive combat and all the underground MMA events been going around New York, and I've watched plenty of your fights and I've watched plenty of Danny Rodriguez fights. What is your plan to stay away from that big right hand that kid has?
Move my fucking head. I mean, you know, not to be sarcastic, you know, that we've been game planning for that. You know, we have several options to move away from the right hand to make sure that he doesn't land as frequent. You know, we're in a fight, so I'm going to get hit either way. So I'm prepared for that. But to counter stuff, you just got to be there to witness it, you know. Just got to be there to witness it. It just makes no sense to sit there and just give away the game plan. You know, but I know that he has a huge right hand. I've seen him use before. Like I said, very good boxing, very, very, very well trained fighter. So, you know, I'm prepped for that.
You ready for a 3-round war?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. You know, it's 3 rounds. You know, you gotta grind it out. It's gonna be a grind. You know, definitely gonna be a grind.
Awesome, Peter. Thank you for calling in. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Now, I don't know where I just lost my train of thought. for those of you who, like Carlos was talking about, come and witness the fight, there's still an opportunity where you can win tickets. I'm doing a charity fundraiser for children born with club feet. For those of you who don't really know what it's about, it's one of the most common birth defects in the world where children's feet are born crooked, they're turned, and they need either surgery or to have use special braces to turn the foot to the correct position. Without it getting done, it makes it difficult to get around. Many kids are bound to a wheelchair and stuff like that if they don't get their feet corrected. But a donation of $25 or more, or every $25 gets you an entry in to win a pair of tickets to the KTFO ACC Cross Promotion Worlds Collide event. And then also I was speaking with actually one of Eric's teammates, Chris Wade, who's a former
high school wrestling teammate of mine. And he's going to be signing a couple photos and T-shirts to give away for those who donate. And then Kai Next Level MMA, he's also donating 90 days to their gym to train for free for those who donate and enter the raffle. So check it out. It's on my Twitter as well, JIBLITG77. Pinned to the top. Click the link. Check it out. Donate if you can. Anything helps the kids. It's for a great cause, so be sure to check that out. Also, if you guys want tickets, just want to buy them straight up, go to KTFO.com or ACCMMA.com tickets as well. Eric, I want to talk about how is training while working another job? I don't think people realize how difficult it is to train for a fight as well as working, and just like you're not able to be, maybe full time in a gym as an amateur. Carlos, I'm sure this is the same thing. As amateurs, you don't get to be a full time fight.
Yeah. Yo, I'm sorry. I can't really hear you at all, Kyle.
Heard the question. Yeah.
Oh, you want to answer it, Carlos? And then I'll ask.
Yeah, answer quickly.
Again.
Yeah, and then Eric can join in. Well, I was fortunate enough where at first I was working full-time. I was working at a physical therapy office. I was working pretty much like some days 13 hours from 7 to 8, open to close. And I would have to literally come when the gym is closed to open up and train or get up extra early, 5 o'clock in the morning, and get to the gym and train, you know, by myself. Sometimes my coach would meet me. But, you know, it's like I said, I was saying before, me and my coach is a two-man team. You know, it's now that I'm starting to cross-train with other coaches and stuff, so I'm fortunate for that. But the majority of my amateur career, him and I were just back and forth like that, and I was working a lot. So I couldn't really train the way these pros are training, those that I'm seeing that I've trained with, that they get to live that life, you know. Everything is hand and foot for the most part, at least the way I look at it. You know, they're being treated. They're being big, you know, because guys like Eric and myself, we got to take care of our family. I have a son, you know, I got to be able to provide for him and my family and whatnot. But yet again, I was fortunate enough to where I can actually work in my gym now. You know, my instructor gave me that privilege of being able to work for him underneath him and get paid. So I'm actually getting to work and train full time. So this is the first time in my amateur career that I'm actually training and teaching full time as a fighter. So I'm fortunate. I count my lucky stars every day. I get to wake up and train. You know?
Awesome, Eric. Yeah. What are your thoughts on being working full time as well as training?
Oh, it definitely takes a lot out of you. I'm lucky enough that I'm in a position with what I do for work right now. I work in real estate, and I buy and sell properties, and I can sort of make my own schedule for myself. And I know that if I have a fight coming up, I sort of try to schedule my fights at time frames when I know I'm not going to have a lot of work. I think I've only taken one fight over the summer because I know that the summer months are a busy time. Same thing with spring. So I usually try to get one or two in each winter. But it, like Carlos said, it's real difficult. Where if you're working a day job, which in the past I've worked day jobs where you're doing 40, 50, 60 hours a week, and then you're trying to fit in training in the evenings or maybe early in the morning, and then you're running on your lunch break. And I worked for one company where they were real cool with me, like letting me have time at lunch, and I would literally go and train at Long Island MMA's pro class at 11 in the morning and then go back into the office, I'd take my suit off, go train, get punched in the face for an hour, put my suit back on, take a shower, put my suit back on, and go back in the office and meet with clients.
Eric, you know what you call that? You know what you call that, Eric? You know what you call that? Hard work and dedication. Hard work and dedication. Yep. Like, nobody ever take that from me, okay?
that's the general gist of like an amateur fighter's life, though. Like Carlos
right.
is saying,
right,
it's
man.
Like you sort of fit that run in when you need to fit that run in, and sometimes that run gets fit in the middle of the night when you can't sleep because
Planet Fitness is open for 24 hours a day.
Right. That's right. Planet Fitness. You see what he said? Planet Fitness. Maybe it's a sponsor so we can get into Equinox or something.
That's what I'm talking about. Planet Fitness. Shout out to Planet Fitness. Look me up on Instagram. Eric _ Ott. You make me and Carlos want to be your spokespersons. So you put
that's
us on
right,
the commercial.
That's right.
I'll wear that purple shirt.
That's right. With pride. In training, getting punched in the face.
Yep.
Now, how's the weight cut for both of you guys? Carlos is going down to 135. Eric, you're going to 185. With Thanksgiving, Christmas coming up, how is the cut in trying to get down to weight with the holidays and the big plates of food being thrown in front of you?
Well, you know, luckily I've always been disciplined. Well, I really have to learn how to be disciplined, you know, like anybody, you know, when you're feeding yourself and you're learning how to be an independent adult and then try to live this lifestyle, you really have to find ways. And, you know, you look up on recipes and you find diets that work and that don't work. I used to fight as heavy as 150 pounds, and mind you, I'm 5'7". You know, I didn't know how to cut weight. And then my first weight cut was I fought at featherweight. I realized that, you know, I am a little below average when it comes to size and weight when it comes to that. So I figured, you know, 35 would be the next cut. And my first 35 cut was really hard for me. You know, I never cut weight before. I got help from guys that have done it. And what really helped was just being disciplined in your eating. You know, if you're not training full time, if you can't train every day, at least train your gut. You know, that's my theory. Eat properly. That's the easy part. That's one headache you don't have to worry about. You can just walk. I walk around right now like 5 to 6 pounds heavier than 35. I'm naturally a 150 guy walking around, but I don't even try to get up to 150 anymore. Even throughout the Thanksgiving holiday, I ate. You know, my mom. You can't say no. Mom's cooking. You know, you get on the table. You just can't say no. But you know, she understands. You know, and I'm Puerto Rican, so we like to eat. We eat big. You know, we eat big. Everything is pork and big plates of everything. And my mom understands, so she took care of me, made sure I had more veggies than anything. And you know, I've trained myself to be disciplined to a point where, you know, it's a hard weight cut either way, because you still gotta dehydrate yourself 24 hours beforehand, because a sip of water, you'll be 2 pounds over. You know, but like I said, you know, I nourish myself well enough to where I don't have to cut crazy amount of weight. So I can say that much about myself.
Awesome. Eric, how's your weight cut been going?
Yeah, we're in a similar boat. Like, this will be my seventh MMA fight, and I've run the gamut. When I was younger, I'm 33 now, but when I was younger, I used to do the big weight cuts, and I've had times where I fought at 85, and then after the fight, I pig out, and then, so you know, the day after the fight, I've weighed 218. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's a pretty big amount of weight. And
yeah, how the hell you put that on?
I do lots of curly fries with barbecue sauce and bacon. I think there were a couple beers in there and some scotch. But
scotch, that'll do it.
Yeah, that's what I miss the most during, like, my dieting and my camp. I still sneak a little sip, like, here or there. I think it makes me a better person, but it makes me less cranky. It makes my wife like me more.
Guilty pleasure. Listen, we're human. We all have to have one Hershey kiss a day.
Oh yeah.
I think we work hard enough. I'll be honest. I had like 6 of them today.
I was going to say, I'm not going to lie, I can't just have one. I can't just have one Hershey Kiss. That's, like, more addictive to me than when I'm dieting.
Yeah.
It's like putting heroin in front of me. Like, you give me one, it's like, oh, I need more.
More.
I get that look in my eyes.
Say that again.
I was saying, I hear that they say chocolate's excellent for a post-workout.
Yeah, I just honestly, I'm sitting here cooking as I'm talking to you guys. I just had a dark chocolate candy, like a little piece. It is good. I feel good. you know, it brings back
it does make
the blood
you feel good. It does make you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, before we start wrapping things up, I'll start with you, Carlos. You want to just tell us what we fans can expect from your fight this weekend? Or not this weekend. Excuse me, December 16th.
Yeah, come on. We got 3 more weeks. Come on. fans, you know, I'm coming out, guns are blazing. You know, I'm going to put it all on the line. You know, just much like my last fight, you get to see me fight more MMA now. I get to pull out some new tricks. You know, I get to really test myself physically, mentally, spiritually, as always. And, you know, I'm coming games. You know, you guys know I come games. I don't bullshit when it comes to this fighting game. You can't because, you know, you have your livelihood on the line. You got somebody else that's trying to knock you out. So you can't take no one lightly. And I'm coming to fight, you know. I'm excited. I can't wait for December 16th. It's been a long road ahead to this training camp. I'm just pumped. I'm excited. You know, we get to really, you know, Eric and myself and the other fighters, we all get, it's not just about me, you know, it's about all of us. And we get to really show that night that this is our night, you know, whether that guy across from us is our opponent or not, we have a love-hate relationship with them. We get to show everybody that, you know what, this is what we trained hard for, and we're doing it at a great space. You know, we're doing it at a great venue. So just expect a lot of, you know, a lot of fireworks in these hands, man.
Awesome, awesome. Eric, what about you? What can fans expect from the fight?
I don't know. Like I said earlier, like I'm in it for the violence, and I've never had a fight. I've never had a fight go to decision ever. So,
oh wow,
I'll leave it at that. I'm going out there and I'm going out there to bang. If it ends up on the feet, I'm cool with that. If it ends up on the ground, I'm even cooler with that. And I'm just out there to scratch that itch that I have and that I've been chasing I've been chasing the dragon since I was a kid. And this is just another night.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to watching both of you guys step inside the cage on December 16th for KTFO and ACC's cross-promotion event, Worlds Collide. It's going to be great. If you guys want to get tickets, like I said, either donate and get a chance to win tickets or go online and buy them at KTFO.com or ACCMMA.com for tickets. Eric and Carlos, so you guys just want to tell us real quick how fans could find you on social media if they want to follow you?
Sure. You want to go first, Carlos?
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
All right. You can find me on Facebook under Eric with a C, O-T-T. Real simple. Got the shortest last name ever. And on Instagram, same thing, Eric_OTT. And I always appreciate new followers. And if you put cool pictures up, I'll follow you back.
Awesome.
Well, unfortunately, my name is a little bit more generic. You know, Carlos Rodriguez is like John Smith. You know, it'll be hard to find me. You'll probably find 10 other Carlos Rodriguez before you find me. But on Facebook, you can find me under Carlos Rodriguez. You could go through the Masuko's Champion Factory page and find me. That's Masuko, M-U-S-U-K-O-S, Champion Factory at Facebook. Or you can find me on Instagram at @thenatural_MCF. Yeah, man, help me out, you know, help me out with these views. I'm not too savvy when it comes to, believe it or not, I'm not, you know, too into the whole posting pictures, but like my pics, you know, I like yours back, and let's help me build this fan base so that we can get to the next level.
Awesome. Guys, I appreciate you coming on, spending an hour with us, chatting. I'm looking forward to both of you guys fighting. I really am. Should be fireworks inside the cage. It's Eric Ott from Long Island MMA and Belmore Kickboxing, and we got Carlos Rodriguez fighting from outside the Bronx. Both in title fights, so be sure to be there, ladies and gentlemen. Don't miss this. This is definitely the event of the year on the amateur level, as well as, you know, the professional level too. There's not many other fights in the area that are competing with this, that's for sure. So thank you for joining us. Be sure to check me out on
Twitter at Jiblitz77, JIBLITZ77, and follow our carrier, MyMMAnews.com, and on social media, at MyMMAnews. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and have a wonderful evening.
Yeah, thank you, Kyle. I appreciate the invite, man. I thank you. Thank you a lot. Oh, he can cut off. Okay.
No, no.
Yeah, have a good night, both of you guys.
Oh, you still on? Come on. But thank you, Kyle, man. We appreciate this, man. Really.
Likewise.
All right, man. Have a good night. Peace.
Have a good night.
All right.
I don't.